Today on Maine Calling, Maine's new Health and Human Services Commissioner, Sarah Gagne-Holmes. Health and Human Services is by far the largest department in state government. It has more than 3,500 employees. Its programs serve one-third of the people in Maine, from MaineCare to state psychiatric hospitals, to the CDC, the foster care system, elder services, and more. In the past few years, DHHS has faced increased scrutiny after the deaths of children under state care. And in September, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a federal lawsuit against Maine for its treatment of children with behavioral disabilities. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with Sarah Gagne-Holmes, the new commissioner of the department, about these issues and more. She's been acting director since June. The legislature confirmed her nomination last month. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The person responsible for overseeing the state's Department of Health and Human Services has a daunting task, overseeing everything from mental health to child welfare to infectious disease. Sarah Gagne-Holmes stepped into her new role as commissioner of DHHS earlier this year. She's our guest today. Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jennifer. Happy to be here.
We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about services for children or older adults, public health or mental health? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Commissioner, you are a lawyer. You spent much of your career as an advocate with Maine Equal Justice Partners and then with the Gorman Foundation. So in the past, you have been the person pushing the system to do more, to do better. How does this experience inform your approach now as head of DHHS?
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, that's correct. I feel that those experiences provide me with a broad range of perspectives, and so I can appreciate the efforts that are happening on the advocacy side and the interest and the shared commitment to improving outcomes for the people of Maine.
All right. Well, DHHS is very much in the news, and I want to talk about some of the major challenges the department faces. In September, the U.S. Department of Justice sued Maine for violating the civil rights of children with behavioral disabilities, and especially for what it said was confining them in facilities far from their homes and communities. How is Maine addressing this? Has anything changed?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, I welcome the opportunity to share some of the work that the department and this administration has done on improving services for children. This is a longstanding issue. PCG wrote a couple of reports about children's behavioral health services back in
PCG?
2018. Sorry, Public Consulting Group.
They were
hired to do a review of children's behavioral health services back under the previous administration. And we've taken their oversight, their overview of the programs, as well as a number of community-based meetings, and we've really listened to what was needed and necessary. And just for the past 6 years, we've made a number of investments, but I want to flag just a couple of things that have been going on since DOJ started looking at the state of Maine. We've made investments, historic investments, in our behavioral health rates to the tune of $237 million, and that for some of children's behavioral health services was an increase of more than 50%. So significant investment in behavioral health rates that will help increase access for children. We've also invested in a number of services that DOJ has specifically indicated we needed to adopt in order to ensure better community-based services. We've made significant improvements since 2022 in adopting a number of evidence-based modalities to better serve children in the community. We are providing free trainings for clinicians so that they are well-versed and certified in these new modalities, and MaineCare is covering or will cover these new services under the MaineCare reimbursement structure. In addition to that, we are seeing improvements. You mentioned a concern with out-of-state placements for children, and at its peak, there are over 250 children who were placed out-of-state. That number is now in the mid-60s. We've made significant improvements, and we're committed to making additional improvements to building our community-based health services. In addition, we've seen a decrease in our wait times for community-based services and rehabilitation services for children. So we are committed to improving access. We want to see children access services. One of the challenges we have with every other employer in the state of Maine is workforce. And that shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody, because we don't deliver the services ourselves. But we are committed, as I said, to providing that free training for clinicians in order to try to improve access statewide.
You started this by talking about all the money that the state is putting into this issue. What does that look like on the ground? What are we seeing on the ground that we didn't see before? Are there actually new facilities? Are there new areas of the state that are covered that were not before? And if so, how?
Well, the investments are not for facilities. That is exactly what DOJ is saying we have too many of, and they want to see community-based services. So it's with these free trainings of clinicians to try to help them become certified to offer the types of programming that can be delivered in the community is what we've been focused on. And the trainings are available for clinicians statewide. And for example, one of the services that DOJ flagged in its letter of findings was the need for high fidelity wraparound services, which is a type of care coordination. It's an evidence-based model. And we've launched a center of excellence to help train providers. And we've done one training that happened in August for 50 providers. And we're I think expecting to do another training this week or next. As you can imagine, Jennifer, systemic change takes time, but we are making progress, and we are committed to improving these services for the kids in Maine.
Another federal report excoriated Maine's child protective system, saying that Maine had failed to comply with federal standards in 94% of child abuse and neglect cases. This comes, of course, after four children died in state custody in 2021. I've read that you say, look, this report is outdated and things have changed. So what kind of changes have been made in the couple years since this report this report is based upon? What kind of changes have happened in the last couple of years in Maine?
Sure. That's a great question, and happy to answer that. I want to start by saying, you know, the OIG report had recommendations, which we welcome. Any type of services that we provide, we always want quality improvement. So we take these recommendations seriously. And I'm really pleased to say that over the last couple of years, we've taken significant steps to improving and addressing workload concerns for the staff, for improving our technology. Katahdin is our new technology program, which we were launching right at the time frame that these cases were being looked at. We're making improvements there, and we're making comprehensive updates to our policies and procedures. Many of these steps have already been taken, and we are continuing to improve those processes so that we can improve our overall system to ensure that kids are safe and families remain strong.
How about caseload for workers? Has that improved?
We've been working on that. I'm really pleased to say that our vacancy rates have decreased significantly, which overall helps with caseload.
All right. So could you say with complete confidence that Child Protective Services would now meet the federal standards and will continue to do so?
I think, you know, with anything, there could be some areas that we still need improvements, but overall, I am confident that we would score much better if OIG was to look at our cases now. As I mentioned, we have improved our procedures with regard to screening, investigations, and responding to reports of child abuse.
Right.
And
And OIG is the Office of Inspector General. Let's talk about nursing homes. In the past 4 years, at least 15 nursing homes have closed in Maine. I know this is a national issue. About 20% of the nursing homes across the nation have closed in that same time period. How concerned are you about this trend? And what is the state doing to make sure older adults are cared for?
Absolutely. As a state with a growing aging population, it is, of course, a priority to the department and this administration. You know, the closure of any facility is difficult on the people who live there and the people who work there and the operators. It is not an easy task to try to make that decision about whether or not you're sustainable. But the department has taken a number of steps, and the administration and the legislature have invested significant funding over the last 6 years to help nursing homes survive and be sustainable. Over the last 2 years, the department has distributed $50 million in supplemental payments to nursing facilities across the state. Since this administration was in place in 2019, there has been a total of $302 million invested in nursing facilities, both at an operational and a financial level. And that's inclusive of the $50 million I just mentioned with regard to supplemental payments. But we have made this a priority, and we're also working on rate reform. So that is forward looking, right? Rate reform is going to happen in 2025. Rate reform will be more forward-looking, so nursing facilities will be able to look at their budgets and be able to better understand sustainability issues. Our rate reform is also going to focus on reducing reliance on temp staffing agencies, which has been the true cost driver here over the last several years, especially since the pandemic. And what we know is that consistent direct support staff is critical to quality of care and also continuity of care. So reducing reliance on temporary agencies is critical and is going to be incentivized in this rate reform that we will implement in 2025.
So rate reform, the way in which nursing homes are compensated and the pace at which they're compensated.
That's correct.
All right. So we've also seen a slew of maternity unit closures, and I'm wondering if you expect things to get worse before they get better. And is there anything DHHS can do to prevent more closures?
You know, I think in part we're seeing closures because of the low birth rates in the state of Maine. That's what it comes down to. How many births are happening in each county or in each town in which these hospitals are located? That's one primary factor, not something that the department can necessarily address, but where we are working collaboratively with the Maine Hospital Association is talking about what can be done. What ways can we influence or can we improve services if we're going to continue to see closures? And so one focus on that is regional compacts, right? To ensure that there are services available in a timely manner for pregnant women. And we've applied for a federal grant, which we're hopeful that we will receive. We'll hear in January that grant would help us to organize, facilitate, and convene these regional conversations to see how we can better support these services.
Commissioner Gagné-Holmes, for years, well predating you, there have been calls to break up DHHS into separate departments. And we're hearing that again, specifically about maybe a separate child welfare office. It is a huge department, and I'm wondering if you believe it would be more effective as two or three smaller, more focused departments.
I think the Department of Health and Human Services, as it's currently formatted, has efficiencies. But I'm also open to anything that is evidence-based that proves that it would function and serve the people of Maine better in a different structure. We're open to feedback and creative thinking, but I feel that the way we are able to work across the department to ensure some continuity with regard to services is best done with a single agency. But again, I remain open-minded. And I believe that's how we've been operating for the last couple of years as this conversation has been underway.
All right. I was on your website this morning and I noticed it's very easy to read, very easy to look and see if somebody might, if someone might be eligible for some benefits, get an idea of some of the services that you provide. One thing I did notice on it, on the top of that website was a banner reminding people that as of November 1st, they would need to do interviews for SNAP benefits. SNAP, of course, what we used to refer to as food stamps. Now it's referred to as SNAP, excuse me. And I'm wondering about that November 1st date. What is different?
That is required by federal regulations. And in part, those in-person interviews were suspended during continuous enrollment, which happened under during the COVID-19 pandemic. Those exceptions or that exception is no longer viable. So we are reminding people that we do need to do in-person interviews as a result of federal regulations.
All right. Well, we have so many more questions for you, but of course need to take a break. We're talking with Sarah Gagne-Holmes, who is the Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services. If you have a question for her, you can give us a call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. My guest today, Maine's new Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, Sarah Gagne-Holmes. She is here to talk about goals and challenges in her new role and to answer your questions. Join the conversation. Send an email, talk@mainepublic.org. A brief email, please. We don't have time to be reading through long emails while we're choosing them and reading them. Or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to those calls, though, I want to ask you, Commissioner, you as well as the rest of the country have been watching as President-elect Trump has been rolling out his nominations for different departments. And many of those departments affect the work that you do. Much of the money comes from the federal government, much of the guidance from places like the CDC. And I'm wondering, as you watch these nominations, what are you doing to prepare for what is clearly going to be a big change?
Well, we are ensuring that our work continues, and the state has been very active. The legislature has funded a number of programs. The governor has supported a number of programs. We continue to ensure that to the degree that we can move forward and implement those programs, that's our focus while we wait and see what happens at the federal level. I think Governor Mills' statement that she issued several weeks ago, basically saying, you know, we're waiting to see what happens. She'll work with a president who has Maine's best interest and she'll fight things that hurt the state of Maine. That's sort of the direction that I'm following and waiting and seeing, but also being ready and doing an assessment of where those concerns may arise, where the funding may be impacted, and getting our proverbial ducks in a row so that we can do what we need to do in order to ensure that we are delivering the services to the people of Maine who are counting on us.
We'll go to Marie, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Marie. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Marie Folitar. The national and state emergency for COVID ended without real mitigation efforts in place, but people like me with long COVID were left stranded on wait lists for services, desperately looking for providers who are educated in long COVID and associated conditions like dysautonomia, ME/CFS, POTS, and reactivated latent viruses. My care paid by Medicaid is entirely out of state. I have not had one provider to date for years who is informed. This has left me wasting and starving off over 100 pounds while begging for help eating and drinking. What actions are you taking to ensure Mainers in state have providers educated in these conditions? Isn't it just cheaper to educate our providers and let Mainers get sicker? And I don't foresee for federal government funding it.
Marie is calling about long COVID. Sarah, clearly frustrated at the
experience she's gone through with providers in this state. Can you tell me about how DHHS is addressing this?
Thank you, Marie, for the question. The CDC provides guidance that it gets from the US CDC to providers on a regular basis. And we, long COVID, I think, is something that the clinicians, the medical world is just getting their hands around. And we maintain our commitment to providing services and education to clinicians where we can. And, it is a challenging situation. And it also falls right back into the issue that we've talked about earlier, and that's just healthcare workforce and our struggle to maintain an adequate workforce in order to ensure timely access.
Marie, thanks for your call. We'll move up to Augusta and Joshua. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I used to work for OMS, Office of Main Care Services, under DHHS for several years. I've also worked in the provider sector for a long time. If we're going to fix the issue, the reimbursement rates have to be looked at much more closely than they are. You have HELMOS aides and DSPs that are on social welfare and assistance and SNAP benefits because they're paid so poorly because of the reimbursement rates. The other reason is you've got the boards and the CEOs of some of these agencies drawing six-figure salaries off of taxpayer money.
Joshua, thank you. Sarah, not the first time here on Maine Calling, we've heard frustration from the frontline workers and the fact that it's hard to live on what they make.
Sure. Thank you, Joshua, for those comments. I would say that this administration, this department has really dug deep in the last several years and passed historic rate reform legislation that's been it's been recognized nationally for its sound methodology and how it will determine reimbursement rates for services. And we have a commitment to reviewing those rates on a certain time every 5 years. And I do believe that we will see more consistency and better, more consistency in rates that better address the needs based on something that is reasonable and also identifiable. With regard to direct care workers, there's been a lot of efforts in the past several years with both state and federal funding to try to pass along increases. We know through some budget initiatives that there were cost of living increases that were made that were supposed to be passed through to frontline workers to help with that issue. So it is an issue that we are concerned about. We hear the concerns that you're raising, Joshua, and we appreciate them, and we're doing what we can within our authority to address them. So thank you.
We'll go now to Hollowell and Rena. Hi, Rena. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Commissioner Sarah, I am so happy you are the new commissioner. As an old lady that is expected to sit in the corner since I've outlived my time and suck my thumb until I die, I wish you could put telephone numbers on what you send out from the human services to the elderly. We do not all have computers, or those of us that have them don't know how to use them or don't use them except to talk to grandkids and make the printing just a little bit larger and not use so many acronyms.
Thank you for that call, for those comments, Rena. I really appreciate you flagging that. Cultural humility and just being able to be aware of the needs of older Mainers. That is, everything you said is spot on, and I've heard my mother say the same. So I will certainly pass that information along to our teams, and just very nice to hear your voice.
Rena, thank you for your call. Let's see, we have some emails and Facebook posts coming in. Lisa on Facebook writes, I would like to know what leadership role the commissioner plans to take in addressing the sexual abuse and torture of two disabled adults in a group home in Hamden. The state is investigating how that abuse was allowed to continue undetected for 3 years, but what about the thousands of other families whose adult sons and daughters receive waiver services? We've heard nothing from the state, no information about the case and what the state's doing to address it. no information about how to detect possible abuse and what resources are available if we suspect our loved ones have been mistreated. The silence from Augusta is deafening.
So I appreciate that email. We have been working very hard to address that issue. The Office of Aging and Disability Services has been meeting with the families who have been impacted and other families who have loved ones who were in similar facilities about the concerns of it happening again. The Office of Aging and Disability Services is doing an internal review. We're bringing on a third party to look at our processes to help us build additional quality controls and also to improve our overall ability to regulate these facilities. Additionally, recently we started licensing all these facilities. So that will be another way that we can ensure that these providers are offering safe and secure services to the people of Maine. It is unfortunate that you feel that we haven't been very open about the issues. We have taken this very seriously. The findings were concerning and disturbing to the department, and we are making every effort to improve these services for the folks who are directly impacted.
We're going to Kevin, who's calling from West Gardner. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Jennifer. I have, I don't know, it's two questions, but it's all in the same vein. It's all about capacity and making sure that Mainers are listened to and heard. And the first thing is, like, you know, what can be done and what is doing to fix the two-hour wait time for people calling to reach DHHS? And also, you know, what we're going to do about the 8,000 Mainers who are still on the wait list for substance abuse and mental health disorder treatment. And, you know, just one, like, some guideline from the commissioners. What's going on to address those issues?
Thank you, Kevin. There are a couple of things. So the wait list, or not the wait list, but the wait times to reach the department. You know, we do have a call center that can triage calls. In addition to that, we have operationalized certain concierge services. So you can call, and if there's a long wait, you can ask for a callback at a specific time. We are continuously trying to improve our ability to shorten wait times within our existing resources. With regard to individuals who are waiting for substance use services and mental health services, we've made significant investments in substance use services, whether it is detox beds or other sorts of important recovery services, the distribution of naloxone, harm reduction programs. We continue to look at those services. We continue to evaluate and assess what next, where the gaps are, and what we can do within our available resources.
All right. You keep saying available resources, Sarah. It sounds like this is where the rubber hits the road.
Absolutely. You know, we don't have the purse strings, and so we do what we can with our federal block grants and with the investments that have been made. And I would just like to underscore that this administration has invested heavily in substance use programming, whether it's recovery, harm reduction, or prevention. And we should be proud of the work that we've done as a state in trying to reduce the stigma associated with substance use, but also in the services that are now more commonly available throughout the state.
Kevin, thanks for your call and your question. We'll go down to York and Torbert. Hi, Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and Commissioner. Commissioner, I have read in the newspaper that rehabilitation hospitals in Massachusetts are found to be charging a huge amount of money, as much as $15,000 to $20,000 a month, with very little of that money going into the patients, the staff, or the facility, but rather being taken out as profit. And I wonder what the commissioner knows about this for rehab hospitals in Maine and what she would do about it.
Thank you, Torbett, for that question. We have our Division of Licensing and Certification does survey hospitals, and they also, you know, control whether or not certain hospitals change of ownership or new investors. So we're able to assess the financial investments and care that's being provided. That's one way we could assess. We also take comments and complaints can be made through the Division of Licensing and Certification that we can then investigate if there are concerns that services aren't being provided or people are being overcharged.
All right. We are speaking with Sarah Gagne-Holmes. She is the commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, Maine's largest department by far. Commissioner, I know that sort of a joke in Augusta is that you might as well be called Lieutenant Governor. There are so many other things I want to ask you about, including the foster care system, but we will take a break. Our phone number, if you would like to ask a question of Sarah Gagne-Holmes, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You still have time to ask a quick question via email or social media in our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are speaking with Sarah Gagne-Holmes. She is Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services. Feel free to join our conversation and ask her a question. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, or you can comment on Facebook or Instagram. Commissioner, I know that a really big issue and a very sad issue has been an increase in the number of children who need to go to foster care. And a big part of that has been the opioid epidemic. I'm wondering where we stand today. How many children in Maine are in foster care? And are there enough foster care families? I know for a while that was a really big problem. Not enough people who have homes in the training to take children in.
Yes, we have a high number. I know it's in the high 2000s. I don't have it, the current number to give you today, but we do have a significant number of children in foster care. And you're right, in part, it is due to the opioid epidemic. And we are addressing that issue. You know, we have contracts in place where we try to recruit new foster care families. We have new services in place for therapeutic foster care. So some kids who need additional services can be placed in homes where the families have been trained in certain behavioral health modalities. We continue to work with our partners. I want to underscore for your listeners that the Department of Health and Human Services is just one player in the child welfare system. It is a system. It does rely on partnerships with the court and with community-based organizations. And we continue to lean in and learn from some of the recent tragedies and to improve our systems to better address the need.
All right. I want to ask you a question about MaineCare. I'm looking at an article from September that talked about a concern that some people were not re-enrolling and perhaps didn't know that the window was closing. That window closed in October. How do we end up? Did people who deserve MaineCare, did most of them get back into the system?
Yes, I think Maine did very well in comparison to other states with the so-called unwinding process of continuous enrollment, which is part of what this issue was. Most of the people who were disenrolled because they moved out of state or they didn't meet income guidelines, and all of our notices with regard to you're no longer eligible for had an opportunity for people to appeal that so they could make their case if they felt that they actually deserved MaineCare. In addition to that, when we make these decisions, if they're not eligible for the full MaineCare service, we do assess if they're eligible for other services within the MaineCare program, which are more limited, but still have some services that are covered. So we did that, and we're proud of the work, and pleased to say that our procedural denials, so people who were disenrolled because maybe they didn't respond, were significantly smaller than what we had anticipated.
All right. And I will note that we are planning a Maine calling program on answers to health insurance questions on December 5th. I'm going to go to Laurel, who's calling from Naples. Hi, Laurel. Go ahead.
Hello, my name's Laurel. I'm a foster mom, and I have a question for you about retaining foster parents. A big issue that we have is the lack of communication of pertinent information about our foster children prior to getting them. I'm talking medical information, behavioral information, really critical stuff that we are not being informed about. And I want to know what the state is doing to address that and to remedy it.
Thank you, Laurel, for the question, but also more importantly, thank you for being a foster mom. It's such an incredible service that you give to the kids of Maine, and we're grateful to have that collaboration. We do acknowledge that there are issues with the information being provided in a timely manner with regard to medical and behavioral health concerns for children in the foster care system. It is a priority of ours to address that issue. We are creating technology processes to address that so that it's more readily available to families. We're also creating new policies and procedures and training our caseworkers and frontline workers on the need to ensure that that information is timely made available to foster parents. I thank you for the question. Again, thank you for being a foster mom.
Laurel, thank you for calling. And our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Going to a question, what does the commissioner think would be the impacts on Maine DHHS if Robert F. Kennedy becomes the head of the National Department of Health and Human Services?
I like to keep an open mind and think that people who come into civil service do it with a particular focus and commitment to the people that they serve. And so we're waiting and seeing before we create any sort of judgments or decisions about what's going to happen. I am hopeful that we can continue to work collaboratively and deliver the services that are needed to the people of Maine.
All right. We're going to go to an email here from Carl, and he does use some language that's outdated. I will read it with that caveat. He says, I lived for decades 2 miles from the Pineland Center for the Mentally Retarded. He says Pineland got a bad rap because legislators would visit having never been exposed to this population. But he believes that the residents were taken care of far better than was presented by the media. What he asks is, where are they now? And you can tell he's a little skeptical. He says, holed up in a group home basement somewhere watching TV with no specially trained staff. Sarah, what for people who've grown up in Maine, were familiar with the Pineland Center, where do the kind of people who would have been housed there in the past, where are they today?
Well, Pineland, like Amhigh, we have community-based services now that are available for individuals, and these individuals are either living on their own or living in licensed homes or maybe with family and receiving community-based services that were once not available. We're proud of the fact that we have become, as a state, more inclusive, and we continue to ensure that we work on providing additional services so that everybody can thrive and live the life that they want.
I know, Commissioner, that this is, I'm going to ask you a question that has to do with so many departments, has to do with the economy at large. What is DHHS's role in trying to help severely reduce, if not end, Maine's homelessness epidemic? What is the role of your agency?
We work very collaboratively with the various partners, both municipal and state partners, to address the needs of individuals who are unhoused. I would say the department is really focused on trying to wrap around the medical and behavioral and mental health services that many people who are homeless need, and provide some care coordination to ensure that they're connected to the community and state resources that are available. That is what I see as our primary role, to be a good partner to ensure that medical needs are met, and they're met in a way that provides for healthy and stable housing.
There is a belief among many that almost everybody who is homeless either has a mental health problem or an addiction. And we know from doing Maine Calling programs with advocates that that is not the case. And I'm wondering how DHHS finds the people who are homeless, who do deserve services.
How do we find them? We rely on our community-based partners who often are delivering services directly to the individuals who find themselves unhoused. We often, or on occasion, will send our eligibility specialists to community-based providers who can then work directly with individuals who find themselves unhoused. Municipalities refer people to us who are going and seeking general assistance, who need additional services. I think in part how we find them is based on how actively engaged we are with our community-based partners. They're key to the work that we do.
All right. And want to note that we are doing a program on homelessness as part of our housing series on Monday, November 25th. The Surgeon General, as you know, is really talking a lot about the epidemic of loneliness. And I'm wondering, I know that he met with Maine leaders recently in September, and I'm wondering what has come of that? Is this a priority for your office? And if so, what can be done?
Yes, we hosted the Surgeon General back in September, and I had a really wonderful conversation with the Surgeon General, with the governor, and our director of the Office of Behavioral Health Services. The conversations there are really broader than just what the Department of Health and Human Services can do. It's what all of us can do. We are all members of our community. We have family and friends and colleagues that we can call and check on, or, you know, offer a ride, have a cup of coffee with, little things like that. It's just social connection that is so critical, that so many of us feel in our very busy and, you know, stressful lives that we don't have the time to do. But I think we're so good at helping each other during times of crisis that we need to stop and remember that we also have to stop in when things are going well and check in on our neighbor and ensure that those services or those conversations are happening. In addition, the department has recognized the need for resiliency given all of the recent storms, severe weather, and the mass shooting in Lewiston, and also the pandemic, a lot of the post-traumatic stress from the pandemic. And so we have a program called Strength in Me that's available for people to call. It's focused on resiliency. We've also been working on the child wellness and prevention front, acknowledging that families, and the Surgeon General has issued a couple of reports about how families are so stressed, and the need really for the community to come and circle around parents and caregivers and support them. So we developed a program in collaboration with the Maine Child Welfare Action Network. It's called the Family Wellbeing and Safety Plan. And we launched a campaign called Be There For Me, which is all about taking away stigma, encouraging people to seek services when they need it, and reminding people that it does take a community to raise a child.
I have the website mymaineconnection.gov up in front of me. Sarah, would you recommend that this is the best place to start if you want to learn more about some of the services that you just mentioned, but also some of the bigger services that Maine DHS offers, such as health assistance through Maine Care and food assistance through SNAP?
Absolutely. My Maine Connection is available 24/7. People can go on and look at the requirements. You know, that is a way that you can apply for services without having to wait for our call center. It is an excellent way to see the services that the department offers on a comprehensive basis. And with regard to some of the services I just mentioned, especially Strength in Me, I would recommend that people look at our website, our Office of Behavioral Health Services.
All right. Do you feel as though, or do you have data to support that perhaps not everyone who is eligible for services is applying?
We serve 1 in 3 individuals in the state of Maine, but we also know that there are people who are eligible for Maine Care Services, a lot of children, especially who are eligible, who are not being enrolled in the program. And we would encourage families to enroll, take a look at My Maine Connection, check out our website. These services are available and they're available statewide. And they are there for you when you need them. And people should not hesitate to enroll if they meet those eligibility requirements.
And when you're talking about children, is it possible that some, maybe the parents don't apply, but the don't qualify, but the children do?
I think that is some of the reasons why we see children who are eligible not enrolled in the program. I think also parents sometimes, just because they're not eligible, don't think their children would be eligible.
Yeah, I think that's where I was going with that. Yeah. So, there's nothing to be lost by going to mymaineconnection.gov and trying to see what's available and poking around and seeing if you might be eligible.
Absolutely true.
All right. Well, Sarah, we just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, are there topics that we have not hit on? Are there priorities in your department or initiatives that you want to stress that you feel as though are really important for the future of Maine, your department, and the people you serve?
There is. Thank you. Yeah. So I want to pivot a little bit and focus on the people who work for the department. I want to take this opportunity to really thank everyone who works at the Department of Health and Human Services for their dedication to our mission, which is ensuring people have health opportunity, resilience, and safety. And I also want to flag just for your listeners that these individuals who work for the department, they are your neighbors, they are friends of your friends, they're family members, they're community members, and they come to work every day despite the challenges. And when I say challenges, I'm not sure people realize or appreciate that our staff on a regular basis receive threats to themselves and to their loved ones, sometimes death threats, all for doing their job. And when you think about that, you know, they're doing this day in and day out despite those threats. And I just want everyone to take a second and think about that. Civil service is an amazing way to serve your neighbors. And these individuals have dedicated sometimes their life to doing this work. And I feel like they should be celebrated rather than threatened.
I'm so sorry to hear this. Has there been an increase in this kind of threatening atmosphere recently?
I think it comes and goes. It's not always, it's not always a very high number. But recently we have seen more, and in part that's because of the scrutiny that the department is under. And I appreciate everybody has a right to their own opinion, but we can also share those opinions respectfully.
It's so discouraging to hear about these death threats, Sarah. I thought what you were going to say is please consider that the workers are facing very difficult situations every day in life. They're being exposed to some of life that most of us are sheltered from, and seeing very sad situations and trying to help people who are experiencing trauma.
They certainly are seeing those things as well, and it takes a toll on them day in and day out, which is all the more reason why they should be celebrated.
All right. Well, I thank you for taking the time to be with us today on Maine Calling. And again, I will emphasize that the website for anyone who's listening, wondering if they qualify for Maine Care, wondering if they qualify for food assistance or education assistance, the website is mymaineconnection.gov. And our guest today, Sarah Gagne-Holmes, the relatively new commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. You can visit the Maine Calling website to sign up for our weekly newsletter or to listen to past programs. Tomorrow on the show, we are pivoting. We're talking all about bread, baking, trends, grains, and where to find great bread in Maine. And yes, we are aware that it's Thanksgiving next week. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.